Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 7th, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a soggy Scott Long.
You're soggy.
You know, I guess we couldn't complain, right? Because I know about 96% of our listening audience is buried under 4 feet of snow right now.
Mm-hmm.
And have been for the last 17 years, it seems like, right?
Right.
But yeah, I was just saying, I get up this morning, I want to go for a walk, and it's raining. Come on! We're in Florida. It's not supposed to rain here. Except when we need it to rain.
That's right.
Which is when I'm not walking. When I'm just home working, then rain then. But
it's funny, I'm always surprised when it rains, like you said. It's like, wow.
Yeah, like, come on, come on.
Who ordered this?
Who needs rain? Of course, all of our California listeners are like, screw you guys.
Yeah.
We're dying out here.
I always wonder if we'll ever build some sort of system that can equally distribute the rain around the world, around the country or something someday. But that'll probably never happen.
Yeah, you know.
Well, speaking of equally distributing things, we promised we would talk about this week, so why don't you catch us up on what happened at WSOPC?
Yeah, this broke just before last week's show, but we wouldn't have had plenty of time to talk about it. Jan Pelton, maybe it's Sean Pelton, I don't know how it's pronounced, who had earlier won a circuit event at Palm Beach Kettle Club in the week. So he's been on fire, as they would say. One of my editors in the past would say, hey, somebody put him out! So he was heads up, getting close to winning his second title, and according to him, decided he wanted to keep a 25,000 unit tournament chip as a souvenir, and removed it from the table, went on to win, and apparently somebody saw it or knew about it, and they did an investigation, did all the cameras, all that kind of stuff, and so then he fed out his punishment last week, stripped him of the title. All his prize money for that event, he got to keep, obviously, for the previous win he won. Banned from Palm Beach Kennel Club until further notice, and probably even bigger, banned from all Caesars Entertainment properties, including the World Series of Poker, indefinitely. He also was obviously going to win the local circuit championship because of his two wins. That's gone. And that means he doesn't get a seat in the Circuit World Championship, which he couldn't use anyhow because he can't play there.
Oh, the National Championship.
The National Championship.
Yeah.
Each one player from each circuit who scores the most points gets a seat in the National Championship every year. Here's been the reaction from what I've seen is kind of split. I don't even want to say 50-50, but there are some people that say, whoa, this is way ridiculously harsh for this guy for what he did. He should have been punished, obviously, but wow, this is like the death penalty for him. And then other people, myself included, saying, right on! Can't tolerate this tomfoolery anymore. And it's severe, but hey, that's what you get for five-finger discounting a chip. Now, of course, the other argument going on, too, is people aren't necessarily believing that he wanted it for a souvenir. They thought that he was going to reintroduce it in the main event later on. But, you know, I was talking to somebody this week about it, and I was saying, you know what, let's just assume that he's being honest and saying that he just wanted a souvenir, right? Let's not even get into that next stratosphere of reintroducing it. Even at that point, I am perfectly fine with this punishment. And so it doesn't matter to me that he was trying to get a souvenir versus reintroducing it. You can't take chips off the table. You just can't. So that's where I stand. Where do you stand?
I stand on my feet a couple of towns south of you. Hey, listen, I'm asking this question because I think we don't know the answer to it, but I don't know. Is this permanent? Like, is it for the rest of his life, death penalty, or is it like...
They said indefinitely. So, I mean, I guess at some point they'll decide to relax it or...
So, like, they want to consider he learned his lesson.
Becomes a good citizen. I don't know. I mean, I kind of get it is that they didn't want to, like, come up with a... I think they probably thought 1 year might have been too little, and I'm sure they probably thought lifetime might have been too severe. Certainly with the reaction that we've gotten from players, they already think that the punishment's too severe, so I can see that. So the good old indefinite gives them that wiggle room where they say, you know, hey.
Let's do it. As long as they're saying indefinite, then, you know, to me it would seem like an unjustified penalty if it was forever on all of these accounts, all these things, from the club to Caesar's properties and all that. The other thing is, I mean, the guy, you know, he made a mistake, and you're right, he could have been stealing it for the main event. That's a very, very good possibility. I'm not saying that's what he was doing. He says he wasn't. It's he said, she said kind of thing. I don't know. I don't want to piss anybody off, you know.
Sure you do.
But I do think
that's why people listen to the show.
I do think it's too harsh.
You do?
Yeah. Right. I mean, okay, he didn't actually use the chip in another event, so you can't frame somebody for a crime they didn't commit. Okay, the crime itself is that he took the chip off, which he's not supposed to do, and there are rules for that, and he should get punished for it. But to permanently ban him or ban him from all of that stuff, yeah, and lose your prize money, yeah, I guess. Or maybe lose your title and get second place money because he didn't do anything that would have helped his situation in that tournament. And, okay, you sort of screwed up when you were heads up, but you've earned your way to this point. So... I don't know. I can see the reasons, and if the rules are in place for it, and it's just they have to follow the rules, that's what they have to do, and I applaud them for following the rules and not making any special, you know, kind of like the rule one in the TDA, where you can do what's best for the game or whatever. I mean, they follow the rules, and that's what you're supposed to do, and fine. It just seems pretty harsh that, you know, because I guess you can call into question... How did he win the other event then? Did he do this again? Did he do this before? Had he done this before? Blah, blah, blah. So maybe that's one of the reasons why you can't trust anything that this guy has now accomplished. But, you know, he made a mistake in one... If you make a mistake in one property for any other offense, are you banned from all of their properties in all these other cases? Has Caesars banned people from all their properties for other mistakes that they've made? Maybe because it's high profile, because it was a World Series thing. I don't know. It just seems a little harsh. And I'm not saying that I've got this huge defense argument planned for this guy, and I'm going to lay it all out for you here now. I haven't given it that much thought. It just seems harsh. I mean, he lost his buy-in. He lost the money that he was going to win. He lost a second title. He lost a gold ring. You know, I mean, that seems like a lot to me already. So, okay, you screwed up, pal, and here's your penalty for doing it. You lost a gold ring, a second one, which would have made you practically immortal in the poker eyes of people. You know, you lost what probably would be 5 to 6 figures. I can't remember what the payouts were.
Yeah, it was less than 100,000, but
all right, it was a lot, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're embarrassed now. You're called, you know, you're going to be called a cheater for the rest of your life. So, I mean, there are a lot of things that are already imposed on this guy. But then to take away what essentially could be his livelihood. Okay, so he screwed up. I mean, what if it was an innocent mistake? You know what I mean?
Well, let's back up. It's definitely not an innocent mistake.
Well,
the question
I know,
is whether he intended to reintroduce it or just wanted a souvenir.
Right.
Neither one of those is innocent, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But one, obviously, is worse, much worse than the other. So.
Yeah, no, exactly. And we won't know what the truth is. So I'm glad that at least it's indefinite. That they may be able to look at and say, okay, this guy learned his lesson. You know, he didn't steal millions from people like they did in Ultimate Bet, yet those guys are still allowed to play places. But, you know, so I don't know. I totally agree that if they follow the rules and this is what's supposed to happen and this is what they have in place, then do it. It just feels harsh to me. It does feel a little bit harsh. I feel like he's getting punished enough already. I don't know.
To the extent I'll agree with you, yeah. Is it harsh? Yes, it's absolutely harsh. So I think part of it is that this guy, again, giving him credit for just souveniring and not reintroducing, he's a victim of bad timing, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't think the punishment would have been anywhere near as severe as it is here had we not just had this ass Bieber up in Borgata that, you know, used the fake chips and flushed them down the toilet.
Right.
We had another fake chip incident in Maryland Live right after that. So I think what certainly I think all responsible poker room managers are doing, and particularly, you know, a series with a valued brand as the World Series is looking at, is there's absolutely no room for us as a poker room to be seen as not upholding the integrity of the game. And yet, the game is not removing chips from play because, you know, once you remove it from play, it's out of control and it could be reintroduced. And we need to act swiftly to protect our business operation and let players know that this is a place where, when they come in, the game is going to be run with integrity. And if you are caught doing something wrong, you're going to be dealt with severely. And So to that extent, I mean, if this happened before Borgata, yeah, it's probably be something completely different. But so that's what kind of gets me the red ass here on this is how do people not see this? What's this going on? I mean, this is obviously a decent player. I mean, I looked back at his history, but obviously he knows what he's doing if he won two circuit events and really large fields in Florida, right?
Yeah.
So he's got to be aware of Borgata, right? Maybe not Maryland Live, but I would think so, right? I got to think people are talking about this stuff, right?
Yeah, so there's no way he doesn't know.
How do you not think, well, I mean, I know there's probably the listeners out there that are raging right now going, Scott, there's a huge difference between ordering fake chips from China and putting them in play and a guy just taking a souvenir. There is from a baseline player perspective, but you got to remember that you're playing in a poker room. And so you can't look at it from the baseline player perspective. This is the same thing we get into a call before all the time. You got to think about it from the business operational standpoint. And, you know, this is just a big, big deal now. And people are flushing chips down the toilet. It might be time for you to say, you know what? If I need a souvenir from this, I'm going to go over and buy a T-shirt, you know.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, you know. I be honest, a freaking gold ring is a pretty darn good souvenir for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's just a lack of awareness that of the climate that we're in now. Or, worse, maybe not a lack of awareness, but totally awareness saying, hey, you know, I'm not the same guy that Borgata. And you're right, you're not, but you're not understanding the fact that you're when you take a chip out of play, there might be 2 or 3 or 6 or 100,000 people that don't believe that you're pulling it out for a souvenir, and they think that you're going to reintroduce it. So it might not be the smartest thing to do.
You know, I totally believe that he, not totally, but I don't think he was taking it for a souvenir. I mean, the reason being is that he already has a souvenir from this series. He's got a gold ring. 2, he's playing for another souvenir, which he ends up winning anyway. 3, if he really wanted a souvenir when it was over, he could have said to the guy, hey, am I allowed to, like, can you guys give me a chip? Can you drill a hole through it so we know it's not good or something? I just want to take something from this win. Anything.
I would be fine with that. I mean, yeah. I'm sure they would say no.
They would say no, but at least, story, yeah, at least it makes sense. Then at the end, you go, hey, I really want to remember this event because I played this guy heads up and it was... Is there something that I can have from it? How about a card? Can you cut a card? Or, you know, anything. So to me, it seems really suspect. All I'm saying is that it did feel kind of harsh to me, the extent of the punishment. And I'm glad that they're at least not giving him an infinite punishment for a finite crime. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, you also got to remember, Borgata's facing a class action lawsuit right now.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I'm not going to compare the two situations because, you know, the person I was talking to at length this week, who's not involved in any of this, just a poker enthusiast. But, you know, I mean, his question was like, Scott, how could they not know that these chips were in play? I mean, they didn't look like the other chips, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a completely different story. But again, I think, you know, again, our whole rule world, for better or worse, is run by lawyers now. And I got to think that as soon as something like this happens, the lawyer's the first call you get saying, hey, shut this down, lock it down. We can't. It's not worth it to us to get sued here. We got to act harshly. And I mean, really, what they're trying to do is make a statement to players: hey, quit this stuff. Just quit it.
Yeah.
You know, chips are the most important thing in the tournament. And they're not souvenirs. They're not things to be played with. They're not things to be counterfeiting with. Just don't do it. And if you do it, this is what rooms are going to start doing now. So quit doing it. And to some degree, I think this guy is taking the brunt of the punishment for everybody who's ever stolen a chip as a souvenir in the past. Yeah. And I feel bad for him for the timing. But, you know, he should have known the timing was going on.
No.
I mean, I actually had a player... just a recreational player that a long time ago told me, you know, hey, every tournament I play in, I steal a chip as a souvenir. And you know how I was a nice guy. I don't really like getting somebody's face, but I'm like, really? That's so weird. And the more, again, as I get involved in the business, the more offended I get by that for lots of reasons. I mean, at that point, I wasn't even thinking about reintroducing because obviously he's taking a 25-unit chip, you know, what the big deal at that point. But... one, this is property of the poker room, right? So you're actually stealing from them. It's not a souvenir. You're stealing. That chip does not... It's not free. There's not, like, you know, Joe's chip maker out there that just makes free chips for poker rooms, right? So they have to pay for it. But really, the bigger thing is they got to... You know, the really good poker rooms catalog their tournament chips after every event. And when a chip goes missing... There's paperwork involved. There's potentially, you know, surveillance checking to figure out what happened because they want to make sure that it didn't get misplaced somewhere in the poker room where somebody could use it, right?
Yeah.
And if you're stealing it from them, they may not find out that you stole it from them. And now, you know, now they've got a compromised chip stack. And so, I mean, what players think is a meaningless little, hey, you know, what's this chip cost to the poker room? 30 cents or something? It's not that big a deal. Really is a big freaking deal. And I think people just got to learn, hey, quit doing this stuff. Just, you know, if you want a souvenir, go buy a cash chip, you know, for a dollar. They're going to sell it to you for a dollar, you take it home. And there's absolutely no wrong, you know, no poker room's going to be upset that you bought a dollar chip and took it home and never brought it back.
No, and I also don't want anyone to think that by us saying, we think that it might be too harsh or whatever, that we're being hypocritical to what we had said in the past when we first heard the other things that were going on. We even wrote a pub column about it in our most recent issue. You know, we obviously think that this stuff needs to stop and we need to take a stand, and this is taking a stand, and I'm totally for all of the punishment this guy gets. It's just, it just feels harsh. It feels like...
Well, yeah, again, and it should be.
But I'm glad that they didn't take this line down, that they did a full investigation, and they made it severe enough that people will really think twice about doing this.
Like, and that's the takeout here. I mean, I'm sorry if any of our listeners are friends with this guy, because I can imagine they're pretty upset. But if you're not connected to him, really, here's what the poker community is saying to you right now. Treat those tournament chips like the eggs that you're given in high school to take around and carry like babies, right?
Yeah.
It's just not worth messing with anymore. You're just going to get yourself in trouble. So as long as everybody understands that, then we're fine. And this poor guy, you know, took it on the chin for the rest of us.
I made a little Yankee cap for my egg. I drew a little face on it and put a little Yankee cap on him. It was great.
I had a guy actually, I hate this. In high school, everybody picks on one guy, right? And fortunately, it wasn't me for a lot of time. But the one guy that people picked on, somebody grabbed his egg, put it in a sock, and then swung it around like a lasso and slammed it against the wall.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm sure the guy that did that is sitting in prison right now.
Speaking of poker players who make poor decisions, I realized I may have spoiled this for you. I didn't know that.
No, this is what's funny, and I guess if you guys are Survivor fans and haven't caught up, because I haven't actually caught up yet, so you might want to take next 5-6 minutes and go get a sandwich so we don't spoil it for you. Waiting. Okay. No, so here's the thing is that you didn't spoil it for me. But obviously, every morning I log on and I check all the poker news from around the country, right? Yeah. So when a poker player's on Survivor, you can't avoid it. So, of course, it came up, boom. I'm like, oh, man. Because I just hadn't got caught up, right? So then later on, I read another story that another guy got voted off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, maybe I misunderstood the other thing, so now, well, now I know this other guy got voted off. So, I mean, it didn't change anything. But then I find out, no, this guy got voted off. So I haven't watched either episode yet. We'll hopefully catch up later this weekend. So I have no idea what's going on. So at this point, it doesn't really matter.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. First, it was the first night of the show, and they voted two people out on the first night.
There we go.
Which is the first time it's ever happened, I think. And so there's a poker player on the show who goes out on the first night, but he's not the first player eliminated. He's the second player on the show eliminated that night. Okay. Anyway, his name's Garrett, and they call him a poker pro. I don't know who he is. I don't know his last name. I don't remember him from any TV or anything like that.
I will say this, though. I was on Hendenbaum's site this morning, just doing some research, and he is the number one trending poker player on Hendenbaum right now.
Oh, sure, because who want to know who's the city?
Yeah, exactly.
Voted out of Survivor.
And of course, he's trending so bad, so high that I didn't even click on to find out, so... I know nothing more about him than you do, so go on.
Here's the deal. It really upsets me, if this guy really is a poker pro, that somebody who played this game this horribly is making money at poker for a living, and I can't do that because I'm not good enough. Yet this guy can't figure out that you don't force your entire tribe to stay in one area and don't let anybody go talk and tell them all what they need to do on the first freaking day of the show. Obviously, you're getting voted off on a blind side, and I'm fairly certain he had the idol.
Oh, really? Awesome.
Or as Scott likes to call it, the hidden immunity idol, even though it's in his hand.
No, I'm an argument against it.
I know you are. That's subtle humor. How come you can give out subtle humor, but you can't figure it out when it's being thrown your way?
Obviously not, no.
So anyway, why do poker players keep getting on this show? They never get past, like, week 5, and most of the time they're out by, like, week 3. Why do they keep picking poker players?
Well, I can tell you why they pick it, because I've actually read a story where they actually, the producers are really into poker players. I don't know. Because I think they like that mindset of kill or be killed, or the constant strategy that poker players go through. I actually read an article once where they really look for that kind of mentality. So it doesn't surprise me that every couple of seasons there's another poker person on here.
Right.
Which makes it all the more likely that one of us should apply so you can get voted off on the first episode and everybody else can laugh at you. So it doesn't surprise me that they're on there. But yeah, you're right. It does seem funny that none of them really actually make it too much farther. I guess part of it, I'm going to say, I mean, just off the top of my head, poker's an individual game, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's no teammates unless you're, you know, Men the Master. In Survivor, it's really not an individual game, at least not for the first half of it, at least. And almost quite to the end, you got to have
alliances and stuff.
Yeah, you got to have skills where you're working with people, and you know, yeah, sure, you want to, like, you know, stab in the back at when it's the right time, but you got to have that ability to work with people and form alliances and things like that. And I just don't think the poker in general fosters that kind of thinking.
Yeah, you know, and to his credit, Jean Robert Belland, who I tried to call Bobby once, and then he told me, call me Jean Robert. he actually got further than I think any of the other poker players did. And, you know, to his credit, I guess, you know, it's not an easy game. But if you watch the show long enough, you got to know some of the basic tenets of this, how to survive, at least to, like, the merge. And if you're not following those tenets, then, you know, why are you even flying halfway across the world to do this when you're going to be out on the first day? It was such a poor play by this guy. You know, for anybody who's watched this show, you know that the minute he said that, he was gone, and he didn't even know it. He thought he was being so smart, and even the comments he's making, like, you know, there's no way I'm going to let them go strategize. Well, you know, there's no way. And he would have survived had he just kept his mouth shut, because there was such an obvious person who was obviously going home. It was so obvious that she was going home. And also, they've broke it up into Brain, Bronze, and Beauty this year for three tribes, and he's on the Brains one. And it's just, and when you see the people in the Brains and what they're doing and how badly they perform, you'll just, like, crack up. But I don't think if you're a poker player, you should think about being on this show, because it just does not work out. Hey, so, you know, I hosted my first home game this week,
I was really bummed that I had plans. I couldn't come over to the Shea Cosenza and play on that nice big table you have.
Well, you know, a couple of things. One, I had hosted one before. But it was a tournament one years and years ago. I never hosted a cash game, so this was fun. And the other thing is that I didn't use the big table. I used a smaller one.
I don't care at all. That
okay,
is.
Good. but it was fun. We had most of the regular crew with us, and you know, we played like we always do. We changed the limits, though. We upped them a notch from what we normally do, and that was fun. I really felt like that was more comfortable for me to play a little more than what we usually play. But I had a hand I wanted to run by you. I don't really care about talking about there was really nothing that was really funny or significant from the game, but there was a hand I wanted to run by you. It was PLO 8, of course, my favorite game of all time.
Yes, absolutely.
The one thing I can't remember is if I was... I'm fairly certain I was in a blind, which is why I played this hand, okay? And Mr. Faso is on my left, and then a couple other people. So a lot of people went to the flop on this hand, okay? Of course, it's PLO 8, so everyone thinks they have a hand. And my hand was 3 of diamonds, 3 of hearts, king of diamonds, or king of hearts, 10 of diamonds. And I was in the big blind. So I got to see the flop for free. A lot of people came around, and it was like, you know, it was a 3-6 game. So it was three, you know, let's say there was probably already 12.
Was it PLO or limit?
PLO 8. Oh, it's PLO 8.
Okay.
So it's possible.
It was not a 3-6 game then, right?
Yeah, no, that's right, but the blinds were 1-1, that's right.
Gotcha.
Right, so we had probably like 5 people to the flop, so it was like 5 in the middle. No, I don't think there was a raise pre-flop, because I wouldn't have called a raise with the hand I had. I didn't have any low draw at all. I had 3-3, 10-8, 2 diamonds, 2 hearts. So, the flop comes 3, and then like a wheel card, like a 4, a wheel card, and then like a high card. So it wasn't... It was like 3-4-9 or something. So I had bottom set, but clearly 2 wheel cards are there. 5 people were in the pot. So I think I checked because I wanted to see what people would bet, try to keep the pot small and then see what happened on the turn. If I paired up on the turn or whatever, then I might have come alive. But anyway, I check, and I think Faso bets a little bit. Faso checks too, and someone else bets a little. I call, and Faso calls. The turn is another wheel card, like the 5 of diamonds. So now it gives me a flush draw and a boat draw. But now a wheel could be made. It wasn't like ace deuce made the wheel, though. I think there was a deuce, and there might have been. Oh, you know what it might have been? It might have been 3-4 ace or some. No, 3-9 ace or something like that. So it wasn't a 4. And then a 4 came on the turn. So somebody needed like 3-5 to make a wheel.
Gotcha.
But a wheel was possible on the turn, and it gave me a flush draw. Now, the only thing I can't remember is if it was the... I think it was not a high flush draw. I think it was the 10 of diamonds. So it wasn't a high flush draw, but I also had a boat draw, and I had a set. There was 20 in the pot at this point, and Faso bet 10. And it folds around to me. And now it's PLO 8. So there's 30 in the pot with his bet. I'm almost positive that I can't win the whole pot, that he's already gotten low and locked up, and I can't improve to a low at all. I mean, I have no low. I have 3-3, like 10-king. So if he has a straight, now I'm drawing just to beat him for the other half,
right?
If he has a wheel. If he just has a regular low, which is still possible, just any old low, I don't think he would have bet out there with just a low. But if he had the wheel, I think he bets out there. So I'm taking some time, and it's like the longest I think I've taken. And I'm like, this has got to be a fold, because I'm only playing for half of that pot. So if there's 30 out there, I'm putting in 10 to win 15. And I may even be having to hit my hand. My threes may not even be good to just get half back, because he might have the wheel already. And so I folded. And Faso was like, thanks for folding, you know, because I'm sure he didn't want me to hit to take half away from him. So he got the whole pot. And then we indeed went looking, and it was like an ace of diamonds, and I would have made a full house and a flush. But we went rabbit hunting to see what it was, because aren't you curious or whatever? So Would you have folded? You have to fold, right?
Yes, you have to fold it.
Okay, all right. That was just curious, because it felt wrong when I was doing it. I don't know, maybe I should... Did I play it wrong, though? Should I have bet the set on the flop?
No. I mean, I think if you had that little low card there, so...
No one's going anywhere, right?
And chances are, yeah, so you're just building a pot for someone else at that point. And particularly the low cards that are on there, I would be worried about it. Your bottom set, which is always terrible, even in regular PLO, let alone PLO 8. Yeah, I mean, that's a hand, when you hit that, you just want to get to the end as cheaply as possible and hope it holds up.
Okay.
And when somebody puts some pressure on you, you know, again, I think that's a big mistake a lot of people make in Omaha 8, which is why I really like it, is that they'll hang on for one half of the pot.
Yeah.
And just don't do the math, and the math just doesn't make sense for one half the pot. You know, even if you occasionally get right, you know, you call. If you would have made that call and then he would have just had a low and you had the high, I mean, you would have made a little bit of money on it, right?
Yeah.
But very little. And it's just not worth it at that point, because the next time you do it, you're going to get brutalized. And the next time, you're going to get brutalized. So you're only going to... It's only going to be profitable. It's not going to be profitable enough. Enough times to make it worth it. So
and there's nothing that says that my full house would have been good there. You know, somebody could have easily had a better full house because the ace is paired.
That's
somebody
true.
Could have had ace, you know, ace another wheel.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's two aces on the board that I'm really worried about.
Yeah,
point.
Well, that came at the river though when I didn't see it. I mean, I made the fold
right.
before
but,
them,
I mean,
but I'm just saying
that's the point though.
Yeah,
so. At that point at the end, and I mean, if obviously it was up to Faso, so I mean, it sounds like he didn't have it, but okay. Yeah, if you had other people in the hand, sure, you know.
Okay.
All kinds of danger there. So,
all right, good. No, thanks good for making me feel better. Hey, we got some cruise giveaways to talk about here. Two poker rooms have announced giveaways for our July 28th Antioch Poker Cruise sailing out of the Orlando, Florida area, which we all now call Port Canaveral. Every time you enter or re-enter an event in the 98 Rockfest series at Derby Lane, it's called Poker Fest. It's in conjunction with a nice big concert series that's going on around here.
Oh, yeah.
In St. Pete, Florida, you'll be entered for a drawing that includes a cruise package for two. Also, on April 10th at Dover Downs Hotel and Casino in Dover, Delaware, we'll hold a $59 tournament with an ocean view package guaranteed as the first prize. For more information, go to antiupcruises.com.
Yeah, glad to see we're finally get some more giveaways for this July 28th cruise. I think a lot of people are going to be looking forward to this one because it's dead in the summer. So all you out there with kids, keep calling us and saying, "Hey, can I do a cruise in the summer? I want to take my kids." Yeah. Or I'm a teacher. Do a cruise in the summer. This is your option. So come out and play. Come out and try to win at one of these places. And you know, I keep saying Orlando because I want to kind of encourage the families out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Come out here, spend a week. You know, spend a couple days at the theme park, probably on the front end. Because after a couple days at the theme parks, you're going to want 4 nights on a cruise. Relax, trust me. And make it a good family vacation. So hope to see a lot of guys on that cruise.
All right. Each week, we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This comes from Everett Rice. He says, many players often criticize their rake at low-limit games, such as 3-6. He said, and state that the games aren't worth really playing at this level. I truly don't understand all the fuss about the rake. I view this as a tax or admission to play. I do understand it takes money off the table. I may be simple in thinking this way, but if I buy in for $100 and leave with $150 after a few hours, then I've made money. Plain and simple. The government rakes my paycheck every other week. I'm not going to stop working just because money that I earn is taken before I even get it. Great point.
Yeah, so let's talk about how the losers pay the rake. no, seriously, we're not going to wade back into that. So, but yeah, I think this is kind of shades of stuff that we've discussed before, and that's part of what Everett's saying is part of my argument that always gets people riled up is that, you know, if I leave with a profit, I didn't pay any rake, right?
Yeah.
So I like the way he thinks here. I think to the extent that he is a little simple-minded, as he said, might be the whole paycheck analysis. I don't think anybody's suggesting that you don't play poker. Because it's a rake. I think the argument about the low limit rake is that it's tough to beat that level rake consistently. So it's not every time you're going to go You could buy it for 100 and leave with 150. If you kind of do that, then yeah, sure, absolutely. But it's tough to do it because, again, the rake at 3-6 limit is generally the same as 6-12, 8-16, any of those ones. So if you think about the money on the table that you're wagering and the rake is the same amount for those games, obviously you're going to have a much better profit potential, assuming skill and all that other stuff that goes into it. But if all things considered equal, you're obviously going to have a much better shot of making a profit at a 8-16 game than a 3-6 when the rake is the same.
Right.
And so that's the consideration there. It's right. Not that there is a rake, it's the percentage of the rake versus the bet size.
Right. And if you are taking home $150 every single time...
Well, you 50. Know, for, he buys it for...
Right. You're taking home $150 when you go in with $100, then you know you're doing fine. So... Yeah, it's just I feel the same way he does in the sense that, hey, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm playing the best of my ability and I'm winning, then I don't really care about the rake. But if I'm losing, then I'm like, all right, now. And if I'm losing and I can't beat 3-6, I'm not going to go play 10-20 because I'm going to lose even more than what the rake would have. You know,
very
so,
true.
So yeah. it's sort of a tough situation to be in, but.
And that's a good point you brought up, too. I mean, I know people hear this all the time. Hey, you can't beat 2-4, can't beat 3-6. You might be able to beat 4-8. So they're like, well, hey, I'm not going to play that game. I'm going to play 6-12 or 10-20 or something. But if you just get your ass handed to you...
Exactly.
It doesn't make any difference at that point. I mean, again, I think you got to understand the argument. The argument is just a percentage of the rake. So yep. If you're not good enough to beat the 10-20... you're better off playing the 3-6 where the rake is going to gobble you up more, because you have a better shot of walking away with some money.
All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com and we'll have Anyup Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about Anyup logo version. And use code ANTIUP for free shipping. This comes from David Smith. He's playing in Omaha in a casino with a final board of 5 of diamonds, 6 of clubs, 9 of spades, jack of diamonds, 4 of spades. On the river, there is a bet from seat 5 and a call from seat 6, and a drunken person in seat 8 who has been rather obnoxious and constantly berating the dealer mindlessly open folds his hand face up directly on top of the community flop.
It's always the drunks, right?
It's always the drunks.
That's why you shouldn't have alcohol on the casino floor.
Says, I look to the person and tell them that seat 3 is yet to act. In the midst of the confusion, the dealer is attempting to separate the drunken player's cards from the community flop. She accidentally replaces the jack of diamonds with the drunken player's ace of spades. We all quickly point this out, and the dealer turns the deck face up and fishes out the jack of diamonds, placing it back in the community flop. Is this the proper procedure, or was she being a hero by keeping the game going without interruption? The floor was never called.
All right, Sam says, this was a hero move on the dealer's part. I have always instructed my dealers to call floor immediately when something odd happens at a table. The player's mucked hand face up in the flop is definitely one of these scenarios. We need to garner as much information as we can to correct this unfortunate situation. The floor is the only person who can properly do this. I'm sure the dealer is flustered by seat 8's actions. It caused a snowball effect that could have completely been avoided by stopping the action and having the floor sort things out. It also sounds as if the player in seat 8 needed to be notified that his actions are unacceptable and they need to come to a stop. Accidents do happen, but this clearly could have been handled in a more professional way.
Yep. I got nothing to say about that. That's perfect.
Yeah, almost any call to the floor, but the last line of the reader email is the floor was never called. It's always going to come back.
Yeah.
And, no, I think it's tough because, you know, a lot of dealers, there's a lot of dealers that are brand new. So, I mean, they're the ones that really need to call the floor. But even really experienced dealers, I think you get to that point where you're just like, hey, I got this. I can handle it.
Yeah.
And that's not the point. It's not the point of whether you can handle it or not. It's a point of calling the floor over so all the players get a full explanation and feel confident that the proper decision was made. You know, and I know that's kind of tough probably for dealers that have been around for 20 years and really know everything, and they've got a floor that's just an up and comer that's only been around for 5, and, you know, occasionally maybe the floor will make a bad decision or something like that. But at the end of the day, it's not about necessarily just getting the decision right. It's, you know, making sure the players feel comfortable that they're playing in a place where the rules are going to be properly explained and taken care of. So it's really kind of a theater in some sense. To have the floor come over, but a very important one.
And then sometimes, too, you have duels that, you know, they're a floor sometimes during the week, and they're a dealer other times. And when they're dealing, they're thinking, well, I know the ruling, so I'm just going to do it. You know, and that sometimes happens, and it shouldn't. You really still should get what looks like an authoritative figure over there to have fed it all out and everything for them.
Well, yeah, and the other problem with dealers making these decisions is that it's really hard for the poker room to have a consistent baseline for how the stuff is done, because every poker room hires 10, 20 times more dealers than they do floors, right?
Right.
So if the floor is making all these controversial decisions, then it's much easier for a poker room manager to get the two or three or six floors together and talk about the decision that it made, rather than having a dealer staff meeting where everybody talks about stuff that's been. So, I mean, from an operational standpoint, I think the dealers really owe it to their employer to have the floor come over and make these kind of decisions, even if they're more than competent or the entire table is agreed on what the decision should be.
All right, I agree. Hey, we got a brand new O'Malley's move. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. We are still at that same 10-20 no-limit hold'em game, and we now have 3,700 in front of us. It's folded all the way around to us on the button, and we see the King of Hearts, Jack of Clubs. This normally isn't a hand we'd want to get involved in, but perhaps we can raise here and pick up $30. We make it $60 to go. The small blind calls, but the big blind folds, and we're going to a flop heads up. With 140 in the pot, it comes down the Jack of Hearts, 10 of Diamonds, 4 of Hearts. This is a decent flop for our hand, and once the small blind checks, we decide to bet. This player is a solid player, tight and aggressive, but has bluffed on a semi-frequent basis, if he feels like he can get a player out. He sits with around 1,600. We make a $100 stab at the pot, and he calls. The pot is now 340, and the turn is the 7 of clubs. Once again, our player elects to check. We want to keep this pot manageable, so we decide to check behind. The pot's the same, and the river is the Jack of Spades. The small blind now leads out for 150. This is an interesting bet. Perhaps he has a Jack as well? I wish we could say we were happy with the size of the pot and we just called, but we make a raise to 400. Our opponent furrows his brow and thinks for a short time before shoving his chips into the middle. Is he Hollywooding? Could he have played 9-8 this way? Jack-10? Ace-Jack? A busted flush draw? Maybe he has King-Jack as well. What's the move?
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is J Design Playing Cards, official playing cards of Anti-Up. Check out J Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And this week comes from Mark, one of my good, let me say he's not really a friend. I met him once at the Aria. He says I was sleeping at the table, which I really wasn't. Because, you know, I only take like 7-8 naps a day, and I'm sure that wasn't one of them. But no, he used to be in what's called the best damn band in the land, Ohio State University Marching Band, back in the day. So I got special affection for him.
Anybody who listens to the show is our friend.
That is true, too.
Bottom line.
All right, so anyhow, this is what our Buckeye has to send in this week. It's in the early morning session at the Hollywood Casino in Columbus, Ohio, home of the best damn band in the land, by the way. And I was sitting in seat number 2 at a 1-2 no-limit hold'em 9-handed table with Squiggly 227.
So how is it about 227?
Squiggly 227? Did he have like quarters and dimes?
I know, exactly. All right, Mark, you're no longer my friend.
The end of the gun calls. Two middle position players call, and we are on the button. So we have three callers, including the end of the gun, at 3 of hearts, 5 of hearts.
So we're on the button.
Button.
The
yes.
Button. Okay.
Three limpers, including the end of the gun, and we have a craptastic hand of 3 hearts, 5 hearts.
Yeah. What am I hoping to prove here? I mean, really, we're going to outplay somebody who's only limping. It'd be one thing if they raise and you can outplay them, you're making them some money, and and whatever, but we have a couple of limpers in a 1-2 game, and you have 3-5 of hearts. Are you hoping to hit, like, the straight flush jackpot hand or something? Or I don't know. I mean, maybe I play too tight. I mean, I do have position, and I don't like to fold my button. If I can avoid it, I'll play the hand, so... But if you're going to play the hand, you might as well play it for a raise so you have some... No one would ever put you on these cards. Don't just limp with it. You know? And then get these limpers out if you can and just sort of go heads up with somebody and just take down a mediocre pot here. But I would not play this hand. If I was under the gun, I wouldn't play this hand. If I was in middle position, I wouldn't play this hand. I would only play this hand for a raise on the button or in the blinds, and I got to see it for half price or free. So... There's just no reason to play this hand, really. The hand means nothing. So that's the other thing, too, is we're always doing hands of the week, and it's always no limit hold'em, and at half the time, the cards don't matter. So if we want to play it that way, then okay, the cards don't matter. Let's not even think about 3-5 of hearts. Let's just play the people and raise. So, but I don't know how these guys play. It's so tough to do these things.
Right. Well, I think this is a classic situation that illustrates a difference between 1-2 no limit hold'em cash games and no limit hold'em tournaments.
Yeah.
Because in a tournament... I would definitely be raising with this hand. It's a great spot to raise, I think. You've got a couple of limpers. You've got some dead money there. You've got a hand that's well disguised. If it hits, it's by raising, you take control of the hand, and you can represent a wide range of hands that have nothing to do with trait or five or hearts or anything like that. And you need to in a tournament because you need to keep accumulating chips or you're going to die. Cash game, you don't need to accumulate chips at all. Right, you can sit there and wait for good situations.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is not a good situation, I don't think. I mean, there's no reason to play this hand. In a tournament, you've got blinds that are escalating. Yeah, you've got to be more creative. 1-2 no limit? Gosh, just play it straight. You know, I mean, it doesn't mean ABC, but I mean, you don't need to get out of line with these crazy holdings. Now, I will say the one time that I would play this, this is one of those considerations, and I'm not saying I would do it all the time, but it would be a consideration, is if there's some kind of promotion going on with, straight flush or it might be a bad beat kind of situation. At this point, for me, in most situations, most poker rooms that have any kind of promotions at all that honor that, I might put $2 in here and just hope that I can get the flop for free and see a really good flop and take my chance at a promotion. And, I mean, you still have the opportunity of winning this hand, right?
Yeah.
But if it's a promotion, I'm definitely not going to raise like I would in a tournament. But with no promotions, if I have to play this hand, if somebody puts a gun to my head and says, Scott, you got to play this, then yeah, I'm going to raise. But in general, I mean, there's no reason to play this hand. Just let go. And
what does he do?
All right. He calls, small blind calls and a big blind check. So six of us go into the flop. At least we got six, so if we hit hard, we're great, right?
Yeah, and we're positioned, so that's nice.
Six players in the hand, $12 in the pot. And see the flop, a four of diamonds, deuce of clubs, eight of clubs, checks around in the middle position player who bets $10. Player between us also calls, and it is on us now. Open-ended straight draw.
Well,
no chance at a flush.
No, if we were playing limit, I would raise.
Sure,
because I want to get the free card, right?
Yep.
And I'm in position, so it's perfect to do this. Now to raise, you'd have to make it like 40, and you're on the come, and somebody who bets into this board with all these limpers probably isn't going to go anywhere. And if they're not going to go anywhere, that means they may even re-raise you. And not that I'm afraid of ever getting my money in on a draw, because I've done that a million times before.
Sure.
But I don't really like to do it on straight draws, and I certainly don't like to do it. You know, when there are people limping, my aces could be gone. You know, there could be a lot of these limpers could have suited aces. They could have, medium aces that they just want to see a flop with or whatever. So even my aces are gone, so I'm thinking maybe that could be possible. So now I'm really counting on the sixes to get there. And like I said, if I re-raise, 30 is probably not enough, so it's probably going to be like 40. Now I've invested $42 in 3-5. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and who knows? Somebody comes over the top. Now I've got to let it go, probably.
Right.
So, I'm probably playing too weak here, but I would not have limped preflop. And if I hadn't limped preflop, I would have, bet here because they probably would have checked to me. And the hands that bet out may not even been in the hand. So there are a lot of things I would have done differently in this hand, so don't hold me accountable. But in this situation, I may just call 10 and see if I hit my hand. Because the people behind me, there are no people behind me. I'm on the button, you know what I mean? The unless there was a check before that. Did it check to that person who bet, or?
Yes, the under gun player checked.
I mean, unless they're going to check raise.
The blinds and the under gun player.
Yeah, unless, I don't think the blinds are going to check. They may check raise, but I doubt it.
Well, again, it's a limp pot, so, I mean, all kinds
anything
of
could happen,
crazy stuff that could happen. Yeah. I mean, here, I absolutely would not raise here.
Yeah.
And here's why, is that we've got a draw. We're on the draw, right? On the come. We have a bet and a call already in, right?
Yeah.
Our hand is incredibly disguised here. I mean, no one's going to put us on 3-5. So I love for an ace to come on the turn, because I know I'm going to get paid off then, right? Because somebody has to have an ace in this hand, right?
Probably, yeah.
And if a 5 comes, I mean, I guess the problem with a 5, though, is that...
Six.
Now you get a 6-7, which...
No, if a 6
comes... Six. Then you've got a straight possibility that the blinds could have. But I'm pretty confident my hand's disguised that I'm going to get paid off. So at this point, I don't want to chase anybody away, because the profit I'm going to get from this hand is going to have more people in there.
Yeah.
And hopefully there's going to be... more money. So I want to call here and hope that one of these three players yet to face this bet also come along and build this pot up, and then I get lucky with that ace gen card that I'm looking for.
I agree. That's a good analysis. Yeah, and I like the idea of just sticking around so that some people might call too as well and build a bigger pot. More people in, the better for us when we're trying to hit a draw. So just hope it's not a club.
Yeah, and the limit, you're right. I definitely want that free card, and then you can get by that with one bet, and then even if you get 3 bet, then it's worth it.
But, yeah.
But here, yeah, you've got a lot of danger by reopening the betting here. Okay, so our hero bets make the call. The three players in between us fold, so we're only three-handed now. And 46 in the pot, they finally take in the $6 rake and jackpot dropout. And the turn is the 6 of clubs. So we're now... 4 diamonds, deuce of clubs, 8 of clubs, 6 of clubs. So clubs got there, and of course our straight got there, but can't be very excited about it now.
No, it's just exactly what I said. Hope it's not a club. But
and let's see, the initial better bets $10 again. The next player raises to 50.
Gah.
And he says the initial player does not look pleased. And now it's on us.
I don't know. Can you really wrap your head around another hand here that would do that? That didn't make a club flush.
Yeah, it's tough, right?
Especially the way he played it. He limped in, probably with a suited ace of clubs, and called the 10. You know, because he didn't have it yet, and somebody was betting 10, and he wouldn't raise with a flush draw, probably like that, because he limped pre-flop, so he's not really an aggressive player. And then when it finally gets there and a guy bets 10 again into him, now he wakes up and raises to 50. What do we beat there now? It's not a set. Is it the same straight? Could somebody have limped, or somebody limped with 5-7?
5-7. I mean, that's the thing. We don't even have the best straight.
We don't have the best straight now, exactly. So this is brutal. I would hate to have to fold a straight here, and I probably wouldn't fold a straight. I don't know. I could maybe, but I just now you're going to call 50, so now you're down 62 in this hand.
And you're going to have to face a river bet,
and a river bet, exactly. That could end up being a club, and you don't have a club in your hand. You know, and then you got 4 clubs. You know, there's a lot to consider.
Although, I mean, the club on the river might be a good card for us, because it might slow
help
us down.
Yeah, or help us get away.
Help us get away. That's it. I mean, it's going to help us win, obviously, if we get clubs already, but at least it'll save us from having to make another hero call. But
it's tough.
But yeah, there's just... very little upside of the sand at this point, right?
No, I mean, yeah, and the signs all point to this guy having it, because the way he played it. If you tell the story, that's the story he just told me. Or that I'm losing to another straight, which it seems weird that he would limp with 5-7. I don't know if he would or not, but it could be 5-7.
Hey, we limp with 3-5, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Can't say somebody else isn't going to limp with a stronger hand.
Yeah. Just imposition was me. It was the reason why I would have played the hand that he played, but I don't know if I would have done it in middle position with 5-7. Anyway, we are behind a few hands now, quite a few hands, and that would have played it this way. So,
yep.
I regrettably probably would fold if it wasn't a club. Obviously, I'd go to town, but and because it's hand of the week too, I'm biased, which isn't fair. I'm probably going to lay it down.
Well, this hand up to this point was worth $12, which is what we put into it. It's not worth 50 now. Yeah. And it's more than 50 because, you know, I mean, what's that river bet going to be? It's going to be at least 50, probably 75, 100. it's just not worth it at that point, because mm-hmm. you know, we have no way of improving. You know, we've got the maximum we can get out of this hand right now, right? We've got our straight. There's no...
There's no redraw. Yeah, exactly. You're just stuck with that.
So at this point, to push somebody off a better hand, we're going to have to represent an even bigger hand, and I don't see that being possible at all either.
Yeah. You folding too?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I went by $12 in here. I had Squidly 227. I got a couple dimes and nickels on the table that I can, you know, say. You know, I did again. I think, you know, I don't think I would have gotten involved, but had I gotten involved, I'm not opposed to investing $12 with his hand with that flop. But I'm not eager to invest 62 plus.
No.
When there's a flush on board, and we could be drawing dead. And not only that, could be drawing dead. This isn't a monsters under the bed kind of thing. This is, as you mentioned, the story adds up.
Yeah.
It's very likely that that he has a flush right now, or the 7-5. I mean, either one of those combinations is very likely, and we can't beat either one of them.
No. We're drawn to a tie if we. If he only has a straight, and we're drawing dead to a flush. So, and we don't even know what the other guy still has. You know, there's other
people
in the hand.
Just because he didn't look pleased doesn't mean that he's not going to go crazy and shove or something and then put us to another test, which obviously at that point we can't call, but then we've just wasted $50.
Yeah, I guess. I'm letting it go, which it seems to me like if I'm in the moment, like if we're on the ship playing and I'm playing 1-2 no limit with these guys, I'm getting it in. You know, I just feel like I'm not thinking about it long enough at the table. But when I'm sitting here really dissecting it, I feel like I have to let it go.
Right. Exactly. All right. So as you mentioned, the other player did not look pleased. We count out the $50. And I cut out behind the $50 my remaining chips before acting. I felt like he was trying to steal the pot. I was pretty sure that the first player was going to fold, so I opt out of the re-raise and make the $50 call, leaving me with Squiggly 157 behind, and the other player did fold.
Okay.
I got problems with trying to figure out that he's stealing the pot. I mean, stealing the pot, it's very difficult against three-handed. I mean, I guess if this guy has been firing on the flop and then on the turn, you could probably push him off by thinking that you have clubs. Obviously, I mean, he sold me that he has clubs, right? So that's a way to get the first player off. But I got to be worried about what am I doing in the hand? I mean, the other player, you know. I don't think it's worth trying to steal a pot there when you got a player that you don't have no information on. And he has no information on us, right?
No.
So I can't put him on a steal here. I mean, maybe he is. Maybe he's a better player than me, but I can't put him on a steal here.
No,
so.
And the key thing you said there was the three people in the hand. It'd be one thing if he was floating and it was heads up. It's another thing to have a guy behind you who had just simply called before. You know what I mean? When we simply called that flop, we could have had clubs. So how could he be stealing representing clubs? You don't want to. You never want to represent a hand that the player behind you has.
Right.
Okay. I played in a tournament in Sarasota once where I had like ace king and the river was an ace or something, and the guy bet out and I raised him and he goes, "Well, that's what I get for representing the hand that you have." And I laughed and everybody laughed and I showed him the hand. He's like, "Yep." And that's exactly what could be happening here. So I don't think someone was trying to represent a hand that could very well be in the field still. So
and if he is, more power to him. He's making a bad decision, I think.
Yeah,
and if he wins this pot, great. It's gonna cost him on future pots, though. So
yeah,
I don't want to be the sheriff that stands up to him.
No, me neither. Not for that money.
Yeah, well, Don Knotts do that for this.
Don Knotts.
All right, so we're heads up now. 145 in the pot, and the river is the deuce of spades. So our final board: four of diamonds, deuce of clubs, eight of clubs. Six of clubs, deuce of spades. So if he had the flush, now he probably gives him some pause that we've been resting on a set and have a boat now. But obviously this guy is not concerned because he immediately goes all in.
Yeah. Oh, now we have like the 197th best hand.
Yes.
So on top of that, we have no play now. Now we have to say, is he bluffing? Or because he could have very well had a set of sixes there and bet that way too. He could have limped with sixes, thought the eight is the only overcard, didn't really believe somebody, turns a set of sixes, and is trying to keep somebody from hitting their clubs, and now he's
made
a boat.
That's a good point, too. Or sometimes people don't see the clubs.
Yeah.
It's 1-2, right? You got to remember, if you flopped a set there, you're not thinking about the clubs for some reason.
Yeah.
You're, and then, I mean, how many times does that happen at the table? You bet and someone raises it, turns over the club. Oh, man. It looks at the board like six times.
Yeah, didn't realize that the clubs were
there. Oh, I didn't see the clubs there. So, yeah, you're right. That's a good point that it's possible that somebody had a set in there. And that doesn't help us. It makes it even worse.
I mean, we don't even have the best straight, much less the best hand.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to risk my entire stack on the 15th best hand here. So I'm letting it go, and I would have probably let it go earlier. But I definitely would let it go now by the way he played it. Just be happy I still have 150.
I got to say the all-in bet is very odd, I think, though. Because he's got to put us on something, right?
How much does he have? I mean,
I don't think he says, unfortunately.
That's the thing, how it can't be. Because if it's 145 in the pot, and you have second nuts of the nuts or something, a bet of 100, which is could be conceivable what he has left, is not that big of a bet. So going all-in, unless I know the amount, it's not really fishy to me.
I'm trying to see whether later on in the hand he says he doesn't really. So yeah, I mean, yeah, if it's $20 all in, that's a bigger, it doesn't make a big deal. But if this is like, you know, pot size or bigger, it does seem like an odd bet to me, because if he had the clubs, I don't think you wouldn't be that bold now the board paired, because we have to have something.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have the clubs, then I guess you're representing, but there is, at that point, the board just got more dangerous, so... I mean, maybe you're assuming that we had the clubs and we caught you in your bluff, and now the board paired, so now you feel the license to punish us for it. But even that's dangerous, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it could just
I don't know.
Be.
It's a weird bet. I mean, it's so weird, but it doesn't change the fact that I'm not willing to commit however much money I need to commit here.
I mean, if it's like a $60 bet, you know, you're not going to fold to a $60 bet, so you might as well put that $60 in and try to get this guy to fold to...
Right.
You know, whatever it is, or get him to call the final 60 because you got the nuts. Either way, until I know what that number was that he shoved with, I can't really condemn it. So I'm just going to say it seems to make sense. If it's within $100, it makes sense to me. I know I'm folding my 150. If he has me covered, I'm folding it anyway. If it's only like 30 or 40, I might call because how much is out there. But if it's, you know, I'm folding if it means most of my stack now.
Okay, so he gives a little bit more information here. So he says, as I sat looking at the player at the end of the table, I was reviewing the betting actions and trying to piece together the actions up to his all-in. Now the player starts talking to me. This is a huge decision. If you don't have a flush, you have to fold. You better have a pretty big flush. I have a really good hand. And he says, I'm sure I must have had a puzzled look on my face at this point when it happens. He says, okay, I'll show you one card. And it turns over the Ace of Hearts.
What? So we haven't called yet? He showed us the Ace of Hearts?
Yep.
We win.
He says, I'm in shock because I look at this Ace of Hearts, I look at the board, I look at his face, immediately call and turn over my hand. At the same time, he gets up and says, ha! I have trips! Dealing his Ace of Hearts, Deuce of Diamonds, and I say, I have a straight. I'm stacking my squiggly 460 pot, much to his dismay.
Oh, scuffs. That makes no sense. Mark,
and,
I think you made this hand up, Mark.
So he goes, I'm still dumbfounded how someone could completely reveal the fact of what the best hands are that he knew could hold to an opponent that has yet to make a decision to call their all-in. By him showing me Ace of Hearts, I knew I had a beat and was left with only one action call. He says, I'm not sure I would have called my remaining 157 to win 315 without that information or the concert chatter.
Yeah, that guy cost himself the pot easily, I think. I think we were folding. And that's crazy. First of all, how does that hand make any sense if you go from the beginning of the hand to that moment? Okay, so he flopped a deuce, then he wakes up on the turn with no redraw at all, only to a deuce or another ace for two pair or trips, and he wakes up and bets 50? I mean, yeah, okay, the river bet might make sense because he made trips if he didn't believe we had any of the other hands, but that hand makes... Now, what, that raise on the turn with another player in the hand with three people in that hand together? That's a crazy raise on the turn.
Yeah, well, it goes back to what we were talking about when our hero was putting him on a bluff, and we're like, crazy, no way. Why would you bluff in that situation? Well, it turns out this guy's just a complete idiot.
Wow.
Right? I mean, he's an idiot in how he played the hand, but even more idiot with this whole talking thing. And, you know, again, this is why I don't talk at the table in the middle of a hand. I mean, it just, no good comes from it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some people that are really good at it. I'm Daniel Grano, absolutely. Jamie Gold made talking an art form. But for the rest of us, just shut up, because I mean, I think this guy was trying to. He thought he was being cute, right?
Man, that's just unbelievable. That's
so even his table talk probably cost him a hand. But then show you one card.
Show you at least show the deuce. See, that's the thing is he's so bad at this game that he thinks that there's no other hand anybody could have.
Well, I think that's why he showed the ace because it showed it made it look like he was bluffing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then of course, I mean, go back from the very beginning. You know, our hand was disguised, so I'm sure he was dumbfounded that we had a straight. But even at that point, I mean, if we he knows we don't have a he shows he doesn't have a club, doesn't have a flush anymore, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, let's say we had the three five clubs, whatever, two very low baby clubs, which would have been a really tough call for us to make here, right? Now you've just made that an easy call for someone with the two clubs where the all-in, you probably could have got them to fold with your trips.
Yeah, if he shows the deuce, we might still fold. Because he could have quads there or anything.
Now we don't know, right?
Yeah.
Quads or boat or something. But yeah, he showed the wrong card. So I wonder if he intended to show that card. Maybe you're like, oh, I don't. Oh.
A fool and his money are soon parted.
But, you know, hey, this is why these 1-2 limit hands are so interesting and frustrating to analyze, because the problem, and I think a couple of our letter writers have brought this up in the past, is that there's just some idiots playing this game.
Yeah.
So when you're out there trying to make these best decisions, you got to kind of assume that people know what they're doing. But sometimes people just are baffling you. They think they have a great hand when they don't. They're doing some crazy stuff that they think is going to win. And man. Yeah,
that's crazy. All right, another good show. Hey, listen, if I'm not here next week or if the streak ends, it's because I just got a tornado warning on my cell phone. So for now, I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
We'll hopefully see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.